would be easy to get enticed into a scheme like that if you were a fucking idiot. And all of a sudden, pow, it hit me. I went, oh.
Oh, there it is.
And once you see it, it's there. The third right. possibility is, you know, Will Smith can save the day.
Welcome to Countless Screaming Argonauts. I'm T-Fat P, the Fabulous Penguin.
And I'm Sober Max.
Sober Max. Today is May 31st, 2010. This is episode 141 of the award-winning podcast of record. And Max, you're sober because it's too hot to drink, huh?
You know, sometimes if you have a little wine, it kind of warms you up.
Yes, it makes me sweat.
Yeah, and I'm upstairs in podcast central headquarters here, and the humidity is high, and the air is still. And while I love my Montezuma wines, today's podcast is brought to you by Diet A&W because it's just too darn hot to drink wine.
There you go. Well, what do we have on the agenda, Max? What do you got for us today?
I've got, you know what, I was going to save this for last, but I think I'll just start right off in it because
okay. It
just amused me so much. I went out looking for silly things on the interweb tubes, and I had a surprisingly difficult time finding, you know, dumb, not so dumb kind of stuff. But I did do a search for, you know, kids say the darndest things, kind of interesting, funny things that kids put on their papers at school. And I came across this one, and I found it in a bunch of different locations, so it may be approaching internet meme. Maybe you've heard of it. It's this one guy, his name is Peter, and he's in a U.S. history class, an honors history class, and he's obviously bored. And there's a number of these essays that he had to do, and I'm going to read you one, and you just have to imagine very boldly written, handwritten, the whole thing is typed, but very boldly handwritten in red, teacher's comments, and I'm going to try to put them in as they go, because it's just weird. I don't know who Jimmy McPherson is. I suspect that it was a goof right from the start, but I looked him up, and I guess he was a musician. So the essay is, influential person in World War II, Jimmy McPherson. And right above that, it says in the teacher's red ink, very cute, Peter. Jimmy McPherson isn't a well-sung hero. He isn't in any history books. Not many people have even heard of him. Some might argue he was never even a documented citizen. But what can't be argued is the contributions he brought to this great nation during his most troubled time, World War II. And it can be also said, without a doubt, that he definitely existed. End of paragraph one. Young Jimmy knew from the beginning that he was destined for greatness. Born to a young African slave couple, Jimmy grew up in Harlem, in upstate Chicago. And the teacher crosses off Chicago and she writes, Harlem is in New York. Like all black youth, Jimmy joined a gang in order to get his props. And above that, the teacher writes, what? He and the rest of his unnamed gang in Harlem ran the streets with an iron fist. Times were good, or were they? And the teacher writes in a little question mark. Times were indeed good until the Japanese performed a sneak attack on young Jimmy's town, killing his parents instantly. And the teacher above it writes, the Japanese never attacked New York or Chicago. Jimmy swore revenge on all the Japanese and promised to avenge the death of his parents, who were on the verge of curing cancer. Jimmy couldn't join the army because Martin Luther King wasn't born yet and blacks couldn't join the military. And on one side of the sentence, she writes, yes, they could. And on the other side of the sentence, she writes, yes, he was. So Jimmy had to form a plan, a deadly plan for revenge. Next paragraph. Using a new name, Jimmy snuck into the Japanese base in Tokyo and fought off countless samurai and ninjas until he came face to face with the president of Japan. And the teacher writes, do you mean the emperor? And Jimmy continues, President Matsumoto, now you're going to pay. This is Jimmy talking.
Right.
Or, yeah, Jimmy. Jimmy said. But little did he know that right behind him was Hitler. And right here, the teacher goes, oh, God, no. Now you must fight us both. Jimmy fought valiantly, but he was no match for both Hitler and President Japan. With his dying charge, he pushed Hitler out the window, falling with him to his death. New paragraph. Jimmy McPherson probably saved the world because he killed Hitler and sacrificed himself in the process. However, since Jimmy used a fake name to do battle in China, his story was never revealed to the American public. Thus, Jimmy's efforts will go passed by unnoticed by time and history. And that's why Jimmy McPherson is a hero and the most influential person in World War II, the end. And the teacher writes, if Jimmy was forgotten by history, how do you know about him? And there it goes. And there are several others like that. The very next one starts with the teacher writing, Peter, please stop doing this. And then he writes a biography of Christopher Columbus. Christopher Columbus was a famous explorer who went to the New World on the order of the president. Not again, .. And his three trusty crewmates, Maria, Santa Maria, and Tupac. And the teacher writes, what? Set out to the farthest expanse of the planet, out to a world they didn't know they could get to. But they had the latest ship technology and could now use the wind to sail and not rely on slaves. Columbus went to the New World, all right, but it wasn't until he tried to return to America that the real nightmare began. A fierce storm crashed their ship on the shore of a strange island. With the radio broken, they had no way of contacting help. Tupac died in the first 10 minutes after arriving on shore. So Columbus, Santa Maria, and Pinto had to proceed without it. And Pinto wasn't even in it in the beginning.
Right. Santa Maria, and Tupac.
Right. They finally saw signs of civilization, but the people were dumb and uncivilized. It wasn't until everyone began a terrible wailing and panic did Columbus really see what was going on. To his horror, the strange island was ruled by intelligent apes. Santa Maria was caught in the nets of the horse-riding monkeys and was taken away screaming. Columbus was also captured and was taken to the Monkey City. Columbus was convinced he had stumbled upon a strange new world and tried to tell the ape overlords that if he was allowed to go free, he would open connections between the new world and the greatest country in the world, the United States of America. The monkeys, amazed by the humans' intelligence, refused to believe that there was an entire land of intelligent human just like Columbus. He demanded that Santa Maria be brought forth, as he was another human capable of speech. But the Mexicans had him lobotomized. And above Mexicans, the teacher just writes three question marks. Without any proof from Santa Maria, Columbus had only one method of showing how intelligent humans could be, so he threw a blanket infested with smallpox on them and was granted his freedom. He got Maria and proceeded toward the shores, trying to find a way to get back home. He did not get far, however, until he saw a visage that would destroy his hopes of ever returning him. For you see, on the beach was the Statue of Liberty. And that's the end. And underneath, the teacher just writes, so what happened to Pinto? This guy's very creative.
What an imagination, huh?
Can I read you one more?
Sure.
All right. Walt Whitman, okay, biography. I chose Walt Whitman for my biography report because Mr. Farlow said that if I wasn't going to take his class seriously and pick a real poet, I might as well not come to class anymore. Walt Whitman was an awful child molester who was born in ancient Hong Kong. He is over 3,000 years old and remembers the names of all the forgotten gods. Walt Whitman is 90 stories tall, and his adventures are legendary. With his blue ox, Emily Dickinson, Walt Whitman traveled across young America and helped the nation grow into the angry powerhouse it is today. He dropped his mighty axe, forming the Grand Canyon. The apple cores he would spit from his mighty mouth planted apple trees all across the country, and the stomp of his mighty boot caused the stock market to crash. He and his friend Huck Finn traveled down the Mississippi River and freed the slaves. Walt Whitman believed that the only good Chinaman was a dead Chinaman, so he went to Tiananmen Square and gave them all candy, except instead of candy, he killed them. Walt Whitman might seem like a real cool guy, but in reality, he's a whiny ass pussy. His live journal, which he doesn't think anyone knows about, is full of whiny goth poetry. His current mood is always apathetic, and his music is always some obscure punk band that no one has ever heard of. Some people who pretended to be his friends so they could get access to his friends-only post grabbed some of poetry and made a book from them and called it Ode to Faggotry. When they found the other goth kids would actually read it, they changed the name to Leaves of Grass, and it sold like goth cakes. Walt Whitman to this day doesn't know they're selling his poems and making a fortune off him. They still don't invite him to any parties, though, because no one likes him. Walt Whitman died a lonely man in Walt Disneyland. He was on the gondola ride and fell out because he wasn't fastened properly to the restraint. Thanks to his dumbass, now none of us can ride it anymore. Thanks a lot, Walt Whitman. And at the bottom, the teacher just writes, Peter, please see me.
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
If you go down and read some of the comments, eventually, I guess this guy finds a creative outlet by doing some artwork or something. I forget exactly how they said it, but he's, you know, alive and well and living a normal life, I guess.
That is funny.
It is weird stuff, though.
That is. That is. Well, I tell you, I got a story that you would say is almost, is just as weird, but it's actually true.
Okay.
All right. I got this from Dvorak's column.
All right.
All right. The headline is, man suspects psychic may be a fake after paying him $150,000.
Wow.
It's a two-minute video. It's on YouTube. And basically, it's this guy appearing in a court testifying about what happened in his case. And the more you hear it, the more you just think that this guy definitely made a left turn at dumb and went straight to, I'm not exactly sure where.
Poverty.
So, yeah. Essentially, in a nutshell, he went to a psychic for a reading. He paid $250 for it. During the reading, he revealed that he was feeling very guilty about stuff and also that he was a Catholic. And she jumped on it.
Those two things go together.
Right. And she jumped on it like a dog on a pork chop. And basically she said that in order for him to be free of this guilt, he had to buy a tabernacle from the Vatican.
Well, that makes sense.
At 23 grand.
And she knew just where he could buy one?
Right. And then she convinced him that he had to buy her a Hummer so that she could take him to special places deep in the woods so that he could angst out this guilt that he had, and he did that. And in doing all this stuff, he maxed out all his credit cards. He borrowed money from the bank against his house, and basically this court proceeding was his bankruptcy proceeding. The next step was that she convinced him that he needed to get some friends involved, and so he contacted a bunch of friends and got them to pay her money to help her. And this guy just goes on and on and on. And in the end, he says he just wants to – he's just doing this because he wants to make sure nobody else gets sucked into a scheme like this.
Well, it would be easy to get enticed into a scheme like that if you were a fucking idiot.
Right. That was my point. I mean, this is so over the top, you know. Oh. And I was just amazed. I was amazed that somebody could be that –
It goes
crazy.
Back to P.T. Barnum, right?
I guess. What else can you say, right?
Really nothing. He just got filched.
I know. $150,000 to this woman.
You know,
so.
At some point, wasn't a crime committed there?
Well, you know, that was part of the news story investigation. They're looking into it. But she never promised him anything. She never said, if you do this, it will, you know, make you feel, you know, guilt-free or whatever. She just advertised it as, by doing this, you're creating a way to become guilt-free.
Wow.
And he just bought
and
it.
She obviously does not have the ability to feel guilt because.
I guess not, no.
Wow.
I guess not.
I'm not sure that's a funny story, but that's really.
Well, it's you know, it's a real story, I guess. That was the.
Yeah.
That was the Speaking of real stories, I got two.
All right.
I don't think that we did this before, but I've got two Jesus in images stories.
Pareidolia.
Right. The first one is from a Phoenix eighth grader who was taking a class in, I don't know exactly what the class was.
We need an intro sound, a segment.
A segment for Jesus?
Sightings of Jesus.
Right, Jesus and other paranormal activities.
So
it was a school science project, and he had to put his thumbprint on a piece of paper.
Yeah?
And they showed a picture of the thumbprint, and I tell you, right there in the middle,
it looks like Jesus.
Jesus, Cat Stevens, or Evan.
That was it. That was the name we were going to come up with.
Right. I'm not sure who. I'm not sure which one of them it was, but he's definitely there. Jesus, Cat Stevens, or Evan.
Did you see the picture on the interweb tubes of the calico cat whose ass looks like Jesus, Cat Stevens?
No, I didn't hear about that one.
You need to go look it up because it kind of really does. It's sad, and I know it's sacrilegious, but it really looks like him.
Like Jesus.
One of those things that, like, the first time I looked at it, I went, why did they put a picture of a cat in there? And I looked through, because there was a whole bunch of pictures. And I went back and looked at that one in particular because I thought, all the rest of these are pictures of Jesus. And all of a sudden, pow, it hit me. I went, oh.
Oh, there it is.
And once you see it, it's there.
It's there. Well, the other one that I have is from an MRI image. Did you see this one on the interweb tubes?
Yeah, I think maybe I did.
It's basically an image slice thickness, 5 millimeters. It gives all the details from Rockford, Illinois Hospital, University of Illinois College of Medicine.
Yeah.
It was a thoracic spine examination, MRI, and on plane image 128, there he is.
Yeah.
Right there. It's Jesus or Cat Stevens or Evan.
I haven't talked to that boy in a while. Maybe he's been doing a lot of traveling.
Doing a lot of traveling, getting around.
I got another picture here, and this is going to be impossible, but I'm going to try it anyway. Math test with a word puzzle.
Right.
A 3-kilogram object is released from rest at a height of 5 millimeters on a curved frictionless ramp. At the foot of the ramp is a spring of force constant K equals 100 N over M. The object slides down the ramp and into the spring, compressing it a distance X before coming to rest. A, find X. B, does the object continue to move after it comes to rest? If yes, how high will it go up the slope before it comes to rest? And the kid does all the math that he can do, and then he draws a picture of an elephant on the ramp. And he goes, no, there's an elephant in the way. And he pulls a zero for that.
Yeah, I could understand.
But you have to see the picture of the elephant. It's very cute.
He pulls a zero for it.
Yeah. Actually, a zero within a zero.
Right. Speaking of grades, I have a little boast here.
Yeah?
College boy got his grades.
I heard.
And he did very, very well.
3.85?
3.94.
3.94.
Right. Yep, 4 A's and an A-.
Well,
he did the dad proud. Hey, listen. Speaking of Ellis education stuff, this is something that I've been wanting to ask you about for a while.
Yeah.
And we kind of skirted it a couple of weeks ago. We never did much with it, so I'll throw it out there now. You know, did you read that Stephen Hawking's interview where he talked about not wanting to, thinking that the arrival of extraterrestrials would be a...
I heard about it. I did not read it.
Yeah. You know, basically, essentially, he said that it was from his documentary on the Discovery Channel. And he says that advanced life forms may be nomads looking to conquer and colonize. And that, you know, they describe it as the cookbook extraterrestrials from the,
right.
from the movie.
From Twilight Zone.
Right, and you know, it was kind of interesting, I guess, because usually whenever people talk about alien coming here, except for South Park talking about the anal probes, you know, they generally seem to be pretty non-threatening. You know, they take a peek, they look around, they capture people, make them have alien babies or whatever, but then that's pretty much it. But this was one of the first times, you know, somebody who I would consider to be intelligent was sort of warning against that sort of thing.
Well,
was that something that
I heard about it? I got the point. I think it's kind of mostly irrelevant because, first of all, we know how close our nearest neighbor is, and anybody farther than that is going to have to take centuries, even at the speed of light, to get here.
Right.
So, you know, if they're coming, they're coming.
Sure.
And I'm not saying there aren't creatures out there.
You're just saying that.
And I agree with his point that, you know, if they can get here and we can't get there, they're probably smarter or more advanced than we are.
Right.
But so what, you know? They're either going to be nice and we'll shake hands with them, or they're going to zap us out of existence and we won't have anything to do about it. Or the third possibility is, you know, Will Smith can save the day. It's going to be what it's going to be. What's the point of worrying about how smart aliens we've never met yet are?
Uh-huh. No, well, that's an interesting take. I mean, I'm not sitting here worrying about the aliens coming out and taking over the Earth. But I just found it interesting. I mean, he compares it to Columbus and the Native Americans.
Yeah.
And well, saying he's probably that right. In that case, it didn't turn out real well for the Native Americans.
But if you remember Peter's version of history, you know, you just give them a blanket with smallpox on it.
And, right, sure.
And in the end, if you think about it, he's not the first guy to come up with this theory. H.G. Wells wrote a book called The War of the Worlds.
Right.
You either read it or saw the movie. Hopefully you were blessed enough to not see the movie. One of the all-time stinkeroos. Did you see it?
I did see it.
It was awful.
It was bad, but I wouldn't – you know, I've seen a lot worse. So.
Yeah, it's classically bad. But anyway, the story was great, and in the end
– a germ, right? Wasn't that how it ended? It was
a germ. The aliens came here and kicked our ass all over New Jersey and then died because of our germs.
Right.
So, you know, Stephen Hawking can suck on that.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't give it much thought, you know.
Are you familiar with the author Bill Bryson?
I think I've heard the name, but no.
Okay, he wrote a book called A Short History of Almost Everything.
Yeah, sounds like a book I would like.
That I'm in the middle of. And essentially what he does is he starts back at the beginning of the universe, the Big Bang Theory, and kind of works his way forward and stops along the way to talk about all kinds of interesting stuff. He talks about how chemistry came into existence, how geology came into existence, where physics, you know, came from and stuff like that.
Right. The history of science is fascinating. Right.
And some of the stuff that you've just mentioned when you were kind of talking about this Hawking's thing were things that he mentioned in his book. The book was written about 8 years ago, I think. Mm. And, you know, he talks about, well, for example, he talks about the distance that you would have to travel to get to other galaxies and stuff.
Right.
And then he says, however, there are people, physicists, who believe that, you know, that the universe kind of folds back on itself and that travel for those kind of great distances may one day very, very well be possible.
Well,
not travel like you and I talk about, but travel nonetheless.
There are concepts of 11 dimensions, which I completely don't understand.
Right.
I've heard about a theory of folding space.
Right.
Of course, anybody who's watched Star Trek has heard about the theory of wormholes.
Wormholes, yeah.
From what I understand about black holes, which cause wormholes, the only problem, it's not a hole.
Right.
It's a place where matter goes to be pulled apart particle by particle.
Right.
So, I've always wondered what happened the day before the Big Bang. What's beyond just the edge of the universe? You know, if the Big Bang started on Monday and now it's Thursday and you were riding the front of it, the wave of it, you know, if you stepped out just a little bit faster, could you get into the next universe or something?
Right.
And I think these kind of questions are probably nonsense questions to a physicist. I don't know. Yeah, maybe there may be a way to fold space or to transport people faster than light.
Right. I would definitely recommend you read this book. You know, I don't usually make a lot of book recommendations, but this one is very, very interesting.
Oh, I'm sure I'd like it, especially if it's on tape.
Well, it is, and that's what I've been listening to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just the best part about it is the fact that he introduces all these people who you know very, very well, Einstein and, you know, that stuff. And
I had a friend who, when I was in high school, we called each other Einstein because we thought we were pretty smart. But Einstein and I really don't have a lot in common.
Right. Well, from the sound of it, nobody had a lot in common with Einstein.
Yeah.
I just recently saw Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about him and stuff. Just amazing stuff. But this Bill Bryson, he adds some real humanity to these people.
Mm-hmm.
But his stories about Hubble, the guy who the telescope is named after, are just fascinating stuff. Because, I mean, the guy basically was a prick and a half.
Oh, is that right?
And he was a liar, and he was a cheat, and he did all kinds of weird stuff, but...
So, like Edison.
He also was the founder of, you know, like, the first universe outside of our own by telescope and you know, all this other stuff. And that's why he was so honored.
Yeah.
But there's lots of those kinds of stories all throughout.
He
talks about how Einstein had to actually invent calculus in order to describe...
Pascal invented calculus, I think.
Well, I'm not sure. I could be mixing up the names. But one of the stories he told him is how whoever invented calculus had to do it in order to explain something, and that's what he did. He invented calculus to do stuff.
Einstein invented enough theories. And when I called up to Total Talk Nonsense and asked him to explain some stuff to me, because Scott's pretty bright. He's got a better handle on things. And I said, tell me the difference between, and I'm going to forget the names of them now because I always do, the theory of big things in space and the theory of little things in atoms. I can't think of the proper names of those two theories. But they both kind of were invented or enhanced by Einstein. I'm waving my hands like you can see.
Right, like it helps.
Yeah, and he couldn't. He can't make the big and the little. I can't believe you can't help me out here with the names.
No, I can't, but I know what you're talking about. I've heard it, but I don't know.
I know the solution is an imaginary unified field theory.
Sounds like something you'd write in one of those papers. That
one of Peter's notes. Right.
The interesting thing is that this Bryson guy explains the theory of relativity.
Yeah.
And after I listened to it, I understood more about it than I ever did when I was a high school student. He did that good a job of explaining it.
General relativity, that's one of them.
Right.
And quantum mechanics.
Okay, sure.
And quantum mechanics has to do with tiny particles, and general relativity has to do with really big particles, essentially.
Right. Right.
And for some reason, these theories are not mathematically justifiable to each other.
Makes them all that much more fun to listen
to.
Yeah,
and they think there's going to be something that'll sort them out eventually. And I don't know what it is. I don't understand why they don't understand. But I was talking to Scott, and Scott said it has to do with the fact that in quantum mechanics, you can't measure both velocity and location.
You know, Bryson talks about this. I remember the discussion about it.
Yeah.
And so you have to just accept the fact that you can either know where it is.
Yeah. And it gets into, and I can't even tell you the reasons now, why particles act as waves. But there was a classic experiment that can be reproduced very easily in your living room. I don't remember it now. Where they separate, you know, a beam of light into, like, two beams of light in a way that can only mean that the photons are particles.
Right.
But it's a beam, so it has to be a wave.
So it has to be a wave, so it's actually both. It's,
right, the whole wave-particle duality. And all of this stuff, I can't even remember, much less synthesize it in my brain.
Right. So, oh, no, it's not easy, for sure.
But I'm sure that I would love that book, because...
Well, that's why the expression, you have to be a rocket scientist, has sufficient meaning.
Yeah.
You know?
What's the Colin Screaming Argonauts expression? You have to be a rocket surgeon.
Rocket surgeon, right. You're opposite me of my primitive ancestry, which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck free. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason off and counting.